Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Just like humans, dogs experience anxiety. While unpleasant, it is normal and it's also a healthy emotion. Dog anxiety can affect all breeds, but it can affect each dog differently. If anxiety is left unchecked, though, a dog can experience and develop an anxiety disorder. And left untreated, dog anxiety can lead to behavior and other issues that are destructive. So what do you need to know about your dog and its anxiety, and how do you treat it? Joining us today to discuss this is Dr. Kelly Cairns. Dr. Cairns currently serves as the Vice President of Medical Excellence and Education for the over 400 hospitals in the Thrive Pet Healthcare System. And Dr. Cairns, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here, David.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this issue because, you know, I have a dog, and my dog, Hoppy, can act like he has anxiety, and then I'm not really sure what's going on. So what do I need to know to identify if my dog has anxiety?
Delightful that you have a dog, David. What kind of dog do you have?
It's a blue heeler.
Oh, nice. Well, one of the things that's really important for folks to understand is that anxiety can manifest through a variety of symptoms and things that you're going to see at home. And it also has a dramatic number of causes, which can make it so confounding and complicated to even identify, is what I'm seeing in my pet anxiety, or could it be something else? So I'd love to chat with you about some of the causes and what we do about it.
Well, you know, I hate to put you on the spot because I know you can't diagnose dogs over the radio. You know, we can't really get into specifics. But you know, our phone lines are open and we do want to hear from folks, and we'll do what we can for you, but we can't diagnose your dog for you. But give us a call to tell us about what you've seen. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Text us at the call-in number, 833-877-8255. So as I mentioned, Hoppy is a blue heeler. Does level of anxiety, they say some dog breeds are more anxious than others. Is that true, Dr. Cairns?
Well, all breeds are different, and all breeds have different things that motivate them, statistically speaking. And what motivates you and what drives you can also play into what might make you anxious. So I don't know that any particular breed is, on average, more anxious than other breeds, but because of the different needs of different breeds, certain stimuli or lack of stimuli might trigger anxiety. So I think it's important for folks to recognize that dogs do get anxiety. Dogs do get stressed, just like people. And it's estimated by the available data we have that about half of dogs do suffer from some form of anxiety or stress. But the causes or the triggers are very variable based upon the individual dog. And that's where the breed can play into that. So the causes of anxiety are very varied and could be a fear of noise, startling or loud stimuli. Potentially, it's being alone or separation anxiety. Or on the other end of the spectrum, it could be a reactivity to actually being around other animals and or people. So both being alone or being overstimulated by other folks and dogs. Or it could be being mobile, like travel. So this is where we do see the breed of the dog sometimes play into statistically what might trigger that dog to be more anxious.
So you're saying it could be understimulation, too much stimulation. So do we just need to observe? What should I watch for to figure out, like, okay, that this was a bad experience for my dog?
Great question. So dogs, like people, have kind of a natural state, a state at rest that is really comfortable for them, and then a state that causes potentially anxiety or stress. And so whilst we can't anthropomorphize dogs directly to people, I'll draw a parallel with people in terms of the classic, are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? What drains you? What fills your cup? So jokes aside, you know, our dogs are different dogs, and they have different personalities. And so what's the symptoms of anxiety, regardless of the cause, are also very, very variable. So here's some of the most common things we'll see for a dog that has underlying anxiety. Could range from aloof behavior, hiding or seeming fearful, or trying to get out of a situation or bolting or trying to escape or being startled. We also can see dogs that manifest that anxiety in behaviors that are destructive, whether it is chewing or damaging things in your house, scratching or digging in the backyard. Sometimes we'll see pets who are anxious will actually have inappropriate elimination because they're anxious or even fearful, which could be urinating or defecating in places they shouldn't. We also could sometimes see aggression from an anxious dog, and that is their manifestation. So what I like to advise pet parents is, if you see any of these behaviors in your dog, which are, of course, very varied, we know that those are all adverse behaviors. They're not behaviors we want to see. They're certainly not behaviors our beloved dog wants to be experiencing. These are not typical relaxed dog behaviors. These are very non-specific symptoms, though. So it's really important for folks to understand that does not mean that your dog has anxiety. It means your dog is experiencing something that needs to be evaluated. And that's where we're going to want you to have a conversation with your veterinarian and a good examination and some testing so we can get to the root of whether there could be something medical going on or something behavioral going on, which might indeed be anxiety.
So let's talk about going to the pet vet and having the dog checked out, and they're going to look to see, you know, if I mean, something we only think they're being anxious, but actually there could be something wrong with a paw or something, and they could figure that out.
Absolutely. So I am a big champion of what I like to call proactive, not reactive wellness care. So making sure you have a really good relationship with your primary care veterinarian who knows you, knows your dog, knows what the routine behavior, lifestyle, environment is of your dog, does a full physical examination, and then what we call some wellness diagnostic testing, most commonly getting a blood, a urine, and a fecal sample to look at the overall health of your dog. Because we can see all of those varied symptoms I mentioned earlier, which could indicate anxiety or other problems, including potentially pain, something internal or externally that's hurting, or potentially a problem with an organ system or an underlying what we call metabolic disease, that the examination, the conversation, and those tests will allow your veterinarian to rule out. And that, in combination with a conversation with you, will really help your vet hone in on whether or not we have a behavioral issue like an anxiety, and then we can cone even further as to what those triggers might be, which then determines coming up with a solution for you.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. We've got a bunch of callers. We'll get Sam on the air as soon as we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we are talking about your dog and your dog's anxiety. If your dog has anxiety, how does it manifest itself? How do you perceive it? And what can be done to help your dog feel safe and secure? And everyone in the household will be much happier. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about dog anxiety today, and yeah, we're not trying to solve the world's problems, you know, these big issues, fat issues that we take on sometimes. But when you think about it, if your dog has anxiety, and then it's untreated or things are happening around them and it gets worse and worse and they develop behavioral issues. Maybe the dog becomes so much of a handful, you just can't handle the dog anymore and you hand it off, or something happens to the dog and that's not good, or the dog becomes aggressive and hurts somebody. We want to avoid that too. So just by, you know, talking about an issue, this is close to you, this is your house, this is your world, and this is how, this is a world important issue as well. So that's why we're doing it. So you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. Dr. Kelly Carnes is our guest. She is the Vice President of Medical Excellence and Education for the Pet Thrive Healthcare System. Let's go to Sam on the phones. And Sam, you're on the air.
So, hi, Dr. Carnes and David. How are y'all?
Great.
Okay, so I'm calling in about my dog, Bucky. We got him from the Paul Jolly Center down by the San Antonio Zoo, who must have been 2016. I think he was about a year and a half. He was fine for a few years, take him on walks and everything. No, he's kind of needy around people. But like recently we've moved about 5 years ago, and the majority of those walks that we take him on, when he sees another dog being walked, or even if they're in their backyard, he just, it makes this very strange vocalization. It's like half whine, half yelp. It sounds almost like a hyena laughing kind of, but he's just like kind of real on edge and like wants to get at them. I don't know if he wants to play or if he wants to fight them, or what the deal is. It's just, we have to stop and like set him down and try to get him to calm down and let the other dog pass. I just don't quite, we've always been curious about what could be the cause, and maybe if you have any ideas there.
All right, Sam, thank you for that question. It's a very important question, because dogs do seem to change completely when they come across another dog. Dr. Carnes? Karens?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if the caller is still on the call to be able to share what kind of dog Bucky is.
Let me see. Hey, Sam, are you still there?
I'm here.
What kind of breed you got?
I believe he's half golden retriever and half chow.
Wow, that'd be a beautiful dog. All right, Sam, thank you.
Thanks. Sure. So I would assume that Bucky has never been around other dogs. I don't know if this is a single dog household. It is somewhat common for dogs who are in a single dog household to have a distinct reaction when they're out and they see other dogs. And it can be difficult to determine what that reaction is based upon the sound that they're making, or even sometimes the posture of their body. Sometimes, and I actually address this issue with my own dog, Winston Karens, who is a Labrapiti mix, in terms of his reaction to dogs when we take him on a walk. And he looks very friendly and he's barking, but he's wagging his tail. But we know through experience that it wouldn't be good for him to be around that other dog. So he is a single dog household. And so what's important is to work with either your veterinarian or another veterinary trainer or behaviorist to try to look at what's happening when you're taking that dog on a walk. And I understand you can't do that in the veterinary office, but you can simulate an interaction where the dogs are kept apart, so that someone who knows dog behavior can try to look at your dog to assess what might be going on in that situation. What you're describing could be that your dog literally just wants to play and is excited. It could be that your dog feels that where he is walking is his territory, and there's some degree of territoriality in the vocalization there. It could be that there is an aggressiveness in that vocalization. And so that's where we can imagine that, based upon what the cause is, the underlying result of getting that dog with your dog could be very variable and very different, right? So I would recommend that next time you go to your vet, you have a conversation about that, and maybe even see if he's in the parking lot and there's other dogs around, if your vet can take a look, to get to the root of that issue with your dog.
Could you videotape it on your phone and show that to him?
Yes, you could. Okay. Absolutely. That would be a great solution, would be to get a video and then have, we love, here's a tip for you. Your veterinarian loves to get videos from you, because really a picture is worth a thousand words. A video is even better. It gives us just a wealth of information. And that holds true if your dog is limping even, or your dog is doing something funny once in a while and you can catch it on video. It's very helpful for us.
All All right, and you can also post it on YouTube and get a bunch of likes. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Robert. And Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I have two dogs. My wife and I, Lisa, have two dogs. One is a husky and one is a lab mix. They're wonderful dogs if it's not storming or if we don't leave them or any loud noises, gunfire. They freak out. I mean, the best way to handle them is to just hug them and hold them in your lap, and then they're better. But we've tried drugs. The drugs seem to really, really freak them out. They really, they're like zombies. And I don't know if that's a safe thing to do. What's the best approach, if you would, please?
What kind of drugs, what kind of medication did you use?
Something that the vet, I believe the vet, I don't remember the name of it. My wife probably know, but yeah.
Well, it was pharmaceutical grade. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for that, Robert. So Dr. Cairns.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. And I can picture your dogs in my head, and I'm sure they're lovely together. Those are great breeds. So what you're describing is really common. Sensitivity to loud noise, gunshots, fireworks, backfiring of a car, exhaust, very, very common for that to cause anxiety and fear for dogs. It's probably one of the more common causes. And it using medications in a situational instance is often a part of the solution toolkit for dogs in that situation. And I'll back up to that again in a moment. But here's some things that I would say you can add to your toolkit. And some of these might be more obvious than others, and some of them we can control and some we can't. But certainly I recommend that if you have a dog that is sensitive to loud noises, avoid at all costs bringing those dogs to situations that might be fun, but where you know there's going to be loud noises. For example, like a fireworks show, which I'm assuming in your situation you're not doing, knowing your dog's reaction to that. And then if you can predict the situation's going to happen, really curating an environment of peace in your house, a quiet as possible, safe space for the dogs during those situational events. So we do this with our own dog, Winston, Cairns, when it is July 4th and we know there's going to be a lot of fireworks. He's not a fan of those noises. Somewhere, preferably without windows, you can try dog TV. The internet is a treasure trove to find things that will play on loops that might attract your dog, TV or radio. There are also TV YouTube clips that have things your dog might want to watch. Our dog likes to watch birds. We want to give the dog a lot of what we call high-value enrichment things. So you know your dog. That is going to look different for every dog. For our dog, it is what we call the big bony, which is a large stuffed animal that has a squeaker inside it shaped like a bone. That is a high value for him. He loves the big bony enrichment toy. Some dogs like chew sticks or a treat stuffed toy, like a Kong that has something inside of it that the dog might like to pull out to help distract from the noises. And it's certainly a great idea to comfort your dog during the noises because they are going to respond to your emotions. So you want to show them in your words and your nonverbals that this is a okay time. Now, there are a variety of non-traditional pharmacologic things you can do as well. There's some great products out there that are really helpful. So there is actually a dog pheromone called Adaptil that you can both use as a collar. It comes impregnated in the collar that you can purchase. There's also a spray and a diffuser you can plug into your wall. And those have what we call evidence-based data that they're efficacious, meaning they help. It's calming pheromones that you cannot smell, but your dog can smell. There's also something called a thunder shirt, which is a little bit of a slightly constrictive shirt that you can buy for the size of your dog. And the pressure is kind of like a weighted blanket for a person when they sleep. And that has been proven to be really helpful in those triggering situations. And then, of course, the medicines you mentioned. There are a variety of medications that can be very helpful situationally to reduce anxiety. As you've noted, they can cause sedation in a dose-dependent manner, and sometimes the dose you need to give to alleviate the anxiety after you've done all of those other things may still make your dog a little sleepy. But I would encourage you to have a conversation with your veterinarian about the dosing range to see if you can fine-tune the dose to get a little bit more what you're looking for and a little bit less gorked dog. That may or may not be possible. Your vet will know the answer. And there may be some other medicines you could try instead of the one you've tried, because just like with people, with dogs, no one medication is going to be a perfect solution for that individual dog. But well, I hope that's helpful, Robert.
So the people, you know, we have fleas. People will apply flea medication or flea collar. Can that aggravate some anxiety or behavior problems?
So most dogs or cats that will have any kind of collar, whether it's a flea collar or whether it's a traditional collar, will not be bothered by the presence of that collar. For a dog that is sensitive or a cat to a flea collar, there are a variety of other very effective ways to prevent fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes that can cause some very and carry some very harmful diseases that are not a collar. And so whether that's injections or topicals between the shoulder blades on the skin or chewable or tablet medications. So there's other solutions to achieve that protection that you want. So definitely make sure your dog or cat gets those medications in the rare instance that you're using a collar and it's bothering your dog.
But the medication itself does not cause any kind of neurological, you know, I've seen videos of animals having problems.
Yeah. So what you're referring to is that some classes of medications, not all, that are used to treat those type of what we call ecto or external parasites do have as a very, very, very rare side effect, the potential for some what you're calling neurologic side effects in terms of twitching or even seizures. That is exceedingly rare when those medications are dispensed by your veterinarian and it's the right medicine for your pet, and cats are different than dogs in that regard. So your vet will be choosing different medications. And so those medicines are considered very safe for dogs and cats to safely prevent against fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes without causing the neurologic side effects. So I think that's probably what you're referring to, because sometimes folks will read about that. So we feel very comfortable medically that those drugs are safe, but those drugs should not cause anxiety.
Oh, and the overall diet of your dog, how does that impact their mental health?
Well, first and foremost, most dogs and cats like food. Some dogs are more food motivated than other dogs. So absolutely, we want to be sure that we're feeding our dogs enough calories. Now, too many calories wouldn't be good, because that could predispose them to obesity, which carries with it an increased risk for medical conditions, including diabetes, including orthopedic problems, but not limited to those problems. So you don't want to feed too many calories, but you do want to make sure that you're asking your veterinarian about how many calories a day does my dog need for optimum health and body weight. Sometimes we actually find that a dog may not be receiving enough calories, and that could lead to anxiety because the dog is hungry. As long as your dog is getting enough calories, which in most instances they are, I think if anything, because we love our pets, we're prone to feeding them too many treats. But as long as your dog is getting enough calories, and as long as you're feeding a reputable, commercial, balanced, and complete dog food diet, which they most of them are, that's the good news. There's a lot of great dog foods out there. So you know you have no nutritional deficiencies. We would not expect that the diet would be a trigger for anxiety in your dog.
All right, got to take another break here. Got to get some callers on the air. Yvette, you're next in the queue. And the number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Having a great conversation about dog anxiety, how to recognize it, how to help deal with it, how to help your dog feel safe and secure. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a conversation about dog anxiety, how to help your dog deal with life. And we're joined by Dr. Kelly Cairns. She is the Vice President of Medical Excellence and Education for the hospitals in the Thrive Pet Healthcare System. Let's go to Yvette on the phones. And Yvette, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello. Thank you all for having this conversation. I'm really glad about it. And my question is, I have recently, well, it's been about a year now, I have, I guess the best way to put it, acquired or adopted a pit bull mix that had like a really traumatic first 2 years of his existence where he was like a neglectful owner. And then like the second owner was the owner that would beat for discipline, like beat, not just like, you know, the light hit. And I have now, like, I've taken the dog over. And can his anxiety be from PTSD from his like previous experiences? Because his aggression, it does come out sometimes, but other times it won't. And it's just, I never know when it's going to snap. And so I don't know like what I should do to try to prevent that, you know?
Well, Yvette, that is such a great question, because some people, they're reluctant to adopt from a shelter because they fear like there might be some, we don't know what the previous owner was like and if that dog has is going to have behavioral issues because of that. So, Dr. Cairns?
Yeah, wow. First, Yvette, I want to just give you a major shout out of gratitude for giving this dog a second chance. What's your dog's name?
Let me get it back on the pot. Hey, Yvette, what's your name of your dog?
Yeah. Creed.
Creed.
Creed?
Yeah.
Creed, awesome. Yeah, and... As the mom of a pity mix, Winston Cairns, I will share my love for this breed and how misunderstood they frequently are. And they are, to know them is to love them. And I sometimes joke that the naughty part of our dog is the Labrador and the delightfully sweet part is the pit bull. So I have a special love in my heart for this breed. Absolutely. A dog that has had prior trauma, just like a human who's had any sort of prior trauma, whether it's neglect or abuse, which you've described Creed has experienced both, will then take that and that will go into that dog to then reflect in that dog's interpretation of the world and behavior in response to the stimuli that that dog is facing. And so there is just a lot of help that we can give to you and Creed. And this is one of those situations where 100%, I would encourage you to have a detailed conversation with your veterinarian. And in an instance like this, your primary care veterinarian may reach out to a board certified veterinary behaviorist to partner with all of you in what we would call the multimodal treatment plan for Creed. These situations are situations that often require the expertise of a board-certified specialist. And so a behaviorist is one of those recognized board-certified specialties. So this would be a veterinarian who's had approximately 4 years of additional training on top of veterinary medical school to only do behavior. And so that is the person who will be really helpful to come up with what we call the multimodal solution to support you and Creed, which will undoubtedly involve a bunch of environmental modifications and enrichment, positive reinforcement, and what we call desensitization to triggers, and may involve at some point a long-term use of a pharmacologic medication. Medications can be life-saving for animals just as they can be for people. But as with people, they're not the first thing we reach for. We reach for counseling, therapy, multimodal behavioral changes. And so we do the same for our dogs. And your dog may not need any medications whatsoever, but I'm mentioning that because that can be something that can be the icing on a cake to help a dog get over the prior traumas. And at the end of the day, when we do all of that, there may still be some situations that we know are always going to be triggers for our dogs that we then avoid if possible, but we can get things to a situation where we know that we have minimized the frequency and severity of those things that will trigger our dog. So absolutely talk to your veterinarian. I feel very, very confident that there's a lot that your team can do for you and Creed.
Now, in the pet food aisle, there are some products that are advertised or marketed as something that could calm down a dog. I don't know how good these products are. I'm very skeptical. But could they be helpful, particularly if you know there's going to be fireworks going off in a neighborhood?
Mm. So just like with nutraceuticals and supplements over the counter for humans, where they're not all created equal, and the regulation of what is in them and are the components of what's touted to be in those really in those, and then have those things been proven to be effective. And just like with people, how that industry is not a one-size-fits-all, and you do have to have a bit of a buyer beware. There's some great products, and there's some products that are not efficacious at all. We find the same in the dog and cat supplement space. So there are some really great things that are over the counter that do have quality control and evidence behind what's in them and studies to support their efficacy. And then again, there are things where there aren't. So as far as a specific item, I would strongly recommend that you have those products vetted by your veterinarian, who will have a recommendation of the things that we know have the quality control, that have the evidence base behind them. The pheromones I mentioned, the Adaptil, the Thunder shirts, which of course is not something you eat or spray, but something you put on your dog, those fall into the bucket of trusted and vetted. So I would say whatever you're looking at in the pet food aisle, talk to your veterinarian and let them do a little bit of the research for you to give you the evidence-based professional opinion on that product.
Let's go to a voicemail that we got earlier.
Hi, this is Justin in San Antonio. As a former professional dog walker, there's three things you can do to reduce your dog's anxiety. First, you can abandon all social media. Second, you can spend as much time as possible in nature. And third, you can exercise yourself and your dog consistently. If you do those three things consistently, your anxiety will go down, which will then influence your dog's anxiety to go down. Thank you.
Dr. Kurenz, what do you think about those points?
Thank you to Justin. I think those are excellent points. And I would concur that our dogs want to be with us. Our dogs want to do things in nature. They want to feel the wind on their face. The three things that he has suggested of being out and about, experiencing nature, getting some exercise within the bounds of what your dog can tolerate related to what may or may not be going on with your dog. For example, an older large breed dog with arthritis, we're probably not going to want to run that dog for 6 miles. But what is reasonable and rational for your dog and getting off those devices so that you can be present with your dog, I think is healthy for both of you.
Let's go to a caller. We have Annabelle. Annabelle, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. You're on the air, Annabelle.
Hi, doctor. I'm calling regarding my rescue. His name is Peter. He's an Aussie Collie, maybe Jack Russell mix. We rescued him from San Antonio Pets Alive when he was about 3 years old. And from the get-go, he's been very anxious. So he's very anxious around humans and very anxious about touch. He questions everything. Unfortunately, we think he was abused so much that he doesn't speak. So he doesn't bark. He doesn't make many sounds. But he sighs a lot, and that's when we can tell that maybe he's tired or he, like, makes a squeaky sound. Our dog is great with other dogs. He plays very great with other dogs. He's more submissive than a leader. But we can't get over the hump of the touch. He hides or he squirms, even from us, his owners. And we've spoken to his vet. We've done training. We've built his confidence. But we're wondering if this is just it for him in regards to his confidence and his human interaction. Our dog travels everywhere. He's a great travel dog. He loves to explore, go to parks. We do absolutely everything with him, but we have this one barrier that we don't know how to jump. And we would love your opinion. Again, we've discussed it with his doctors, medication is just not for us, I think.
All right, Annabelle, thank you for the call.
Yeah, and if Annabelle's still on, I'd love to know if there's one thing that could be achieved that would be success for you, where you're like, if we could just get X, that would be really great for us. What would that look like for you?
Oh, my God. If we could have heat. So we have cameras, and when we leave, we turn them on. And when we leave, he jumps on the couch, and he plays with his toys. But when we're home, he has his bed, which he made in his cave under our dining table. And we, in order to play when we're home, he only likes to do puzzles. And so we hide treats, and he finds treats. But there's only so many treats we can give him a day. But he doesn't come out of his cave, and he doesn't come on the couch. Like, I would love for him to sit on the couch, and I don't have to touch you. I could be on the other side, but I would love for you to be closer. I think that would make me cry.
Okay. Well, I understand that, because I love to snuggle up with Hoppy. Well, we're right up against a break. So we're going to have to take this break, and then we'll come back and we'll get the response to Annabelle's question from Dr. Corinne's. And if you get a question, you can give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're talking about dog anxiety on The Source today. And we'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, talking about dog anxiety, how to help your dog feel safe and secure, help avoid a problem with behavioral issues. And it all starts with making your dog happy and safe. So, Dr. Corinne's, can you respond to that question we got?
So, really interesting to hear Annabelle's story with Peter. So, sounds like this dog was rescued at about 3 years of age, and she's had him for quite a while. And what a delightful breed combination. So when I hear an Aussie and a Collie mixed with a Jack Russell, I just think this dog, no wonder this dog wants to, is skeptical about things and wants to do puzzles, because we've got three breeds that are very, very smart. Sometimes I joke about the Jack Russell being the Albert Einstein of the dog world, so the puzzles doesn't surprise me. We also have some breeds that have a high kind of herding instinct as well, and very active dogs too. So it's interesting that this dog she described is a little submissive with the other dogs. Sometimes we see that these breeds be a little more dominant, but again, with what she's described about potential abuse in the past, and they're not really sure what might have happened, but it sounds like the main concern is chronic anxious behavior of not wanting to be with them, which is, you know, doesn't make them feel great, because they'd love to be able to cuddle on the couch with Peter, which he is on the couch alone when they're gone. I think he just wants to hog the whole couch. But I certainly understand and appreciate and have a lot of gratitude for Annabelle, in that it sounds like she's done a lot of work with her veterinarian already to do a lot of things. So this might fall into the bucket of, I have no one magic short solution for Annabelle and Peter and the rest of their family. But what I would say is, it's an opportunity to think about and go back and talk to your vet again to ask if you can fine tune and refine the desensitization training for Peter. So in doing the things that Peter does like, and I understand we can't give Peter 5 million treats, but most dogs are food motivated. So if we can slowly desensitize a little bit of time on the couch with a little bit of touch, very short segments with positive reinforcement with a treat that he likes, and don't push it. So even if things are going well, take that 30-second win and stop that interaction before Peter says, I'm a little overwhelmed, I got to go back to my hidey hole. And then Peter has controlled the interaction, and we've done it we've ended it before it's too stressful for Peter. And my experience is by fine-tuning that desensitization and pairing it with positive reinforcement, we can oftentimes make a little progress here in what it is you're looking for. Success would look like a little bit more time on the couch watching something you like with Peter.
Let's listen to another voicemail we received earlier.
My name is Andrea. Some tips that I have to reduce a dog's anxiety. First thing is pretty simple. Just create a calm area for them where they can spend time by themselves if they choose to do so. Some people are just overloading their dogs with guests and going places, and sometimes dogs just need to de-stress on their own, maybe even a crate that can stay open and they can just go in there to feel safe. The second thing that I would recommend is also pretty simple, but doing like species-specific activities, taking your dog on a walk where no one else is around, using a longer leash, like 10 to 15 feet, and letting them do whatever they want. If they want to smell for 20 minutes, let them smell. You know, if they just want to lay there and relax, let them do that. Anything that's species specific to dogs, so smelling, tearing up stuff, sounds kind of like, you know, owners don't want their dogs to tear up stuff, but maybe let them tear up a newspaper. Giving them something that's an outlet that is a natural behavior for canines can definitely help reduce anxiety. And, you know, not expecting every dog to want to go into public and interact with everyone, you know, meeting your dog's needs and observing them and seeing what they like and just doing those activities with them. Thank you. Have a good day.
So, Dr. Kerenz, are we overloading our dogs by taking them to the dog park or to the bar? You know, people like to take their dogs everywhere these days.
Well, you know, again, dogs are all different. They're all unique. They all like different things, and they're all averse to different things. And I think Andrea has given us some really amazing and very easily actionable tips in our toolkit in what she's outlined. So 100% giving them that calm area, that space that is their own. Many times you might hear the phrase even crate training, where a dog has its own crate that you keep open, that they can go in anytime. It becomes their safe space. It's in a quiet area of the house. I think that's a great tip. I love the tip of species-specific activities, as well as giving them those wins. So we do this with Winston. I've mentioned previously our very sweet but poorly mannered Labrapiti mix does have some less than desirable anxious behaviors on walks that are informed by specific triggers, large trucks, other dogs, people, bicycles. But we do exactly what Andrea has suggested, is when there's no one around, even if we make the time, even if we're in a bit of a hurry, we will then find a safe area where he can roll around as long as he wants. He can sniff as long as he wants. We can extend that leash a little bit, giving them those wins. If they like to chew things up, we are giving them things that are theirs to chew, which will redirect the behaviors that might be adverse related to anxiety. One of the things I'd love to just quickly point out that Andrea, in all of her tips, what I'm hearing is, how can you set yourself up for success upstream? And so I think it's really important for folks to understand that when you do adopt a new furry family member, regardless if they're a puppy or a kitten, or if they are a rescue and they're a mature adult or even a senior pet, it's really critical, just like you go to your vet, to make sure you've done that proactive wellness, you get those vaccinations, you do the examination, you do the wellness blood and urine and fecal testing. You also want to be thinking about environment and behavior in that, and thinking about what you can set up in your house based upon your dog's personality. You know, if we go back to Peter, Annabelle's dog, you know, no getting that Albert Einstein dog his puzzles right away. If we know we have a dog that's a bit more of an introvert and likes to be alone, getting them that safe space. So looking at what you can do upstream so we can prevent the preventable or control the controllable to mitigate those stressors that are going to be anxious. I think that will serve folks well in their toolkit.
All right, time for one more caller. Last caller, let's go to Kathy. And Kathy, hey, you're on the air.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. So I have a question for you. My husband and I, well, my family, we rescued a 5-pound, then at the time 4-pound Chihuahua, and we named him Coco. Poco, pardon me, Poco, and he's, so our Chihuahua, we've never had one before, and they tend to be mean, and we Googled it, and Googled the fact that he is, his breed is, you know, they've got issues biting. So, first of all, he bites everybody, all of us in the family, and he's, you know, even to the point where we bled. And then also the other thing is he's an old man. We took him to the vet and he's probably like anywhere from 9 to 11 years old, and he's not fixed. So those are the two issues that we are experiencing, the biggest issues with him.
All right, Kathy, well, we can't really deal directly with your dog's issues, but we can kind of talk in general terms about a situation like that. Dr. Corinne?
Yeah, and I couldn't hear, Kathy, just at the end there about what was going on at the very end there.
All right.
That her dog, Coco, is older, and I didn't hear that
last
part.
He's not fixed. I think that's the part that she told us.
I see. Yes. Not neutered. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so the Chihuahua is a dog. We like to say small and mighty. I kind of have a running joke. If there's six dogs in the house and one of them is a Chihuahua and all the rest are 100 pounds, the Chihuahua is probably in charge. The Chihuahua is the project manager of that situation. They are delightful dogs. They're very intelligent, very loyal, but yes, can be dogs that have big personalities. And it sounds like we have a situation where Coco does tend to get snippy or bite. And again, I can't say without evaluating him what the one or many causes of that might be. But what I can say is that when we have a patient who is older or senior dog that's had these behaviors for many years, it is unlikely that we're going to have a magic bullet to be able to make them go away, which I'm sure Kathy understands. You know, we don't have one magic pill for that. Definitely, if a dog is intact, the additional male hormones can, in many instances, contribute to some territoriality as well as some aggression. But it might be worth a conversation with your veterinarian. There are times when it is a very safe thing to do to neuter an older dog or castrate an older dog. There are some times when medically that may not be considered, the relative benefits may not outweigh the relative risk, because that does require general anesthesia. What I can say is that I've definitely seen older dogs with ingrained patterns of behavior definitely be helped by doing some desensitization and some multimodal, what we call environmental enrichment and positive reinforcement, which is not to sugarcoat the situation, but I would talk to your veterinarian and maybe they even pull a behaviorist on board for a teleconsult. That's the beauty of technology, to evaluate if there might be some things that you can do to help you and Coco enjoy what hopefully is going to be many more years of life, because Chihuahuas can often live to be 15 to 20.
Wow. So that's a lot. And we appreciate all of your advice and wisdom on dog anxiety today. Dr. Kelly Kearns is the Vice President of Medical Excellence and Education for the hospitals in the Thrive Pet Healthcare System. And it was really great talking to you, Dr. Kearns. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, David.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.